From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? It is another lovely day in the neighborhood. Welcome to Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Yeah, I'm a little sick today. I'm getting over it, though. The fall weather has me down. Also, Alex is a little, Alex kind of sounds like a frog today. You'll get to hear him in just a sec. We both are sick, but hey, we're going to bring it like we do each and every day. Cold is not going to shut us down, okay? Today, we'll talk about the U of M and Michigan State rivalry. That's right, Andre Sims, MSU redshirt junior wide receiver, will be joining me to talk about what this rivalry means and give us sort of a game preview heading into Saturday. We'll also talk about the globalization of the NFL as the Lions are in London. Yes, crepes and tea, folks. Crepes and tea. Gotta love that stuff. And we'll also talk about the World Series as the Giants have ended the streak of the Kansas City Royals. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on the show. Before we dive into all of that action, here is the man, the myth, the legend. Dr. Smooth is what we call him. Tyler Beck is here with your current sports quick hit headliners.
I'm Tyler Beck, and here are today's current sports quick hit headliners for October 22nd. The San Francisco Giants captured Game 1 in Kansas City, defeating the Royals 7-1. San Francisco got to Royals starter James Shields early, scoring 3 runs in the first inning, including a 2-run homer from Hunter Pence. Madison Bumgarner went 7 innings for the Giants, giving up 3 hits and 1 earned run, while striking out 5 to earn the win. Action continues tonight at 8 o'clock. The Detroit Red Wings fell to the Montreal Canadiens 2-1 last night in overtime. Henrik Zetterberg scored his second goal of the season to put the Wings up 1-0 in the second. In the third period, Pavel Datsyuk appeared to score an unbelievable goal on the backhand, but the goal was nullified due to incidental contact, where former Spartan Justin Aldicator apparently interfered with Montreal goaltender Carey Price. With 3:09 to play in regulation, Alex Galchenyuk tied the game at 1, and David Dierne had the game winner in overtime. Serena Williams suffered the worst defeat on her career since 1998, when she was only 16. Williams lost the first two sets, 6-0 and 6-2, and ultimately the match to fourth-ranked Simona Halep. Williams described her play as embarrassing and also said, quote, "My forehand was off today. It's obviously gone on early vacation. My serve was at best at the 10 and under division for juniors," end quote. Oscar Pistorius spent the first night of his 5-year prison sentence in a hospital wing. On Tuesday, Pistorius was sentenced to 5 years in prison for culpable homicide after killing his girlfriend on Valentine's Day in 2013. Former Baltimore Ravens halfback Ray Rice has filed a grievance against his former team for terminating his contract. According to Pro Football Talk, if Rice's grievance and appeal are approved, he will collect $3.52 million, the same amount he would have earned if he was reinstated following his original suspension. The University of Georgia is expected to apply for a reinstatement of star running back Todd Gurley. Gurley was suspended indefinitely from the team on October 9th after he reportedly received money in exchange for autographs. Gurley remains the SEC's rushing leader with 773 yards in just 5 games. William Powell made the trip to London for the Detroit Lions, but was waived a day later. The former practice squad player was waived after safety Jerome Coupland cleared waivers. Coupland was originally waived to make room for former Michigan State tight end Kellen Davis. The Detroit Pistons have recently acquired center Joel Anthony. Anthony said he is, quote, "looking forward to the opportunity and is excited to be with Detroit." Anthony appeared in 33 games last season with the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. He looks to provide depth behind big men Andre Drummond, Greg Monroe, and Josh Smith. Defensive end Michael Sam has officially been released by the Dallas Cowboys. Sam, who was drafted in the 7th round by the St. Louis Rams, is the first openly gay player to be drafted in the NFL. And those are today's current sports quick hit headliners. Let's send it back to Al Martin in the studio.
Tyler, my man, appreciate that, brother. Our phone lines are now open. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. if you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything we talk about today. 517 855-9527. 517-355-9527 is the number. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR or at our official Current Sports Twitter page of WKAR_sports. So much to talk about, folks. And yes, it is rivalry week. We've been talking about Michigan State and Michigan throughout our first 2 days, now into our third day here in the week here on Current Sports. And we are encouraging you all to call in and give your thoughts or memories, favorite memories throughout the storied Michigan State and Michigan rivalry. What's your favorite moment? We had a few tweets yesterday that I read on the show, and we had a few callers. So, hey, you know, our phone lines will be open 2 p.m., folks, 517-355-9527. Later on in the show, it's Wednesday, and each and every Wednesday here on the show, we love to dive into a debate topic and bring a sort of, I guess you can say, like a first take, you know, Skip and Stephen A type of feel. And today's Barbershop Wednesday centers on the impact of Monet Davis on baseball and just sports in general. Now, the reason we bring this up is because if you tuned into the World Series last night, you would know that Monet Davis had a very cool commercial spot directed by the great Spike Lee. And it kind of just talked about Monet Davis's summer, and you got to see a really fun side to her. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy because they were like, okay, if she's doing a commercial here, is she getting paid for it? Is that against NCAA rules, even though she's not even playing for an NCAA team and she's 13 years old? So there's a lot. That discussion can go a different ways, but we'll talk about the impact of Monet Davis on baseball and just sports in general. We'll also talk about the Red Wings having Datsuk back. What does that mean for the Red Wings? And is Kobe Bryant a top 40 player? Is Kobe Bryant a top 40 player? You know, that story is pretty controversial as well, considering the fact that ESPN has really been dogging your mans. Yeah, they've been talking about Kobe, and they came out with their, you know, ESPN always does these pre-rankings of the top 50 players in the league. And Kobe Bryant was, a guy who's, you know, been historically dominant in the game of basketball. He's definitely on my top 10 list of greatest basketball players of all time. You know, the closest thing to Michael Jordan I've seen since Mike is retired. But they put him down at number 40. Kobe didn't like it, and he called ESPN a bunch of, quote, idiots. ESPN fired back. In an interesting way, and sort of backed up their argument, which was, if you ask me, I kind of agree with ESPN. But I'll give you my thoughts on that as well, folks. Again, 517-355-9527. You also get to hear from Andre Sims, MSU redshirt junior wide receiver, talking about rivalry week, how practice has been so far this week, and even, you know, the Paul Bunyan trophy, which, you know, is it really an ugly trophy? But what it symbolizes is greater than its looks, okay? So we'll talk with Andre and get his thoughts on the rivalry and how Michigan State is prepping for Michigan. But before we get to all of that, of course, I have to now welcome Alex Shark, the man behind the glass, and we are both a little sick here.
Yeah, this frog left his green pond at the Diag today to come over here.
Yeah, yeah, man.
You can hear my croaking.
I can hear a little. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be when I heard it just now. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not too bad.
The great things of medicine today.
Yeah, what'd you take? Robitussin? What?
Yeah,
what
a little Robitussin.
Yeah, I took some, what is this? I took some off-brand, it doesn't even have a...
I bought green Robitussin to spill it on the Diag. That was me.
That's
I'm
what you did?
Claim
oh, man. Well, hey, well, you may not finish this show, brother. The authorities may be coming after you. But no, isn't that crazy, though? Yeah, if you haven't heard, folks, the Black M on U of M's campus on the Diag at the University of Michigan has been painted green ahead of the school's football game against Michigan State. How about that? Now, Michigan Daily. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do you like that? Do you like that that was painted green? Do you think that's over the top?
Yeah,
vandalism?
No, I think it's funny. It's one of those things. If you look at last year, you know, Sparty had a big black M, yellow M, maize M. Excuse me. I don't like when you say yellow. The maize M painted on his chest. You remember that? And now they have somebody protecting it now, which is, it's a very cool feature being done actually by Channel 6 News tonight at 6 p.m. On those who protect Sparty. I'm going to tune in for that. But, yeah, I mean, so, hey, it's the rivalry. What do you expect here, man? It's all in fun. Don't take it personal. Don't take it personal, folks. This is what the Michigan and Michigan State rivalry is all about. But, yeah, I mean, the Michigan Daily reported that the defaced brass letter was spotted Wednesday morning, this morning, on the main pedestrian walkway through Central Campus in Ann Arbor. Now, the letters S and U were also added to put, of course, you know, to complete the thing, you know, MSU, and were painted in white alongside the M, spelling out MSU. So, yeah, I mean, hey, I think it's funny. I think it's funny, man. Don't take it personal, U of M.
Yeah, your colleague, Rico Beard, loved it.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw
it. I like it, too. I feel him on that. Yeah,
I don't know.
It's rare that me and Rico agree, but yeah, I feel him on this one, man. I mean, it's part of the rivalry,
well,
stuff like this happens.
I tweeted about this earlier. It kind of reminds me when you're an adolescent or a young teen, and you're going to a house, and you're ringing the doorbell, and you're running away. Kind of like a classic ding-dong ditch. This is what it kind of reminds me.
Yeah, that's how the rivalry, isn't the rivalry supposed to be fun?
But these are students, Sal.
Yeah, these are students. So what? That's the thing. College students do stupid stuff. It's how it is. I mean, this is just the college atmosphere,
yeah.
Okay? Stuff like this happens all the time. I mean, we can even equate this to the, well, no, that may be a little, that's kind of a different conversation. I was about
vandalism?
To say the riots.
What is Michigan painted over Sparty?
That's vandalism too, yeah.
Right.
And so, this was vandalism. These are two cases of vandalism.
That's still a little over the top.
No, it's fun. It is lighthearted. It's the rivalry that is Michigan State and Michigan. Don't take it personal. I didn't take it personal when I saw the black M when I was driving to work one day painted on Sparty. I'm sitting there like, hey, that's just how it is. That's just the rivalry. You know what I mean? Now, you know, so Alex, we got you on the show. Now we, of course, also want to introduce our two fantastic interns, Tyler Beck and Jock DeWitt. How you guys doing? Did you guys take it personal? I mean, you guys are students here on the campus. Alex is too as well. But, I mean, when you guys heard about this story with the block M being painted on U of M's campus, I mean, what is your reaction to it?
Yeah, I took it personal.
You took it personal? But, hold on, in a good way, because you're a Michigan State student, though, right? You're like, you've got to be like, oh, yeah, that's fun stuff.
I mean, I personally would not go and deface someone's property.
Of course, right.
But I found it amusing. Now, when the block M was painted on Sparty,
right.
Yes, I took it personal, and that is, you know, maybe a little hypocritical on me, but you don't touch my stuff. If I don't like you, don't touch my stuff.
Right, but that's the rivalry.
It is the rivalry.
It makes it even more added incentive to watch on Saturday. Jack, did you like it, man?
Yeah, I think it's all in good fun from both sides. Even being a Michigan State student, you know, Michigan starts off, oh, let's paint the block M on Sparty, and then we go ahead and retaliate. I think it's all in good fun, and, you know, it just kind of heats up the rivalry even more.
It does. It's fun. People, you know, I've always said, in today's society, people are just a little too sensitive, man. Lighten up, put a smile on your face, and just laugh it off, you know? I think it's a fun, lighthearted type of thing to do. But, hey, this is me talking. All right, folks. Well, let's transition now, get to our first topic before we invite Andre Sims to talk about what this rivalry means as far as the X and O side of things goes. And from a player perspective, not a student or a fan perspective, it's going to be an interesting chat with Andre. Before we get to him, let's talk a little Lions. And particularly, you know, get away from, and I mean, not talk specifically about the game in London. Of course, the Lions touched down in London yesterday. They're getting ready for the game against the Atlanta Falcons. But, you know, this game and this moment has been tried a few times by the NFL. It's the NFL's attempt to quote-unquote globalize, to make the game global. And that's, I mean, ideally, if you make whatever sport global, it ideally attracts more fans, more revenue could come from that, and so on and so forth. Now, I want to get your guys' thoughts on the NFL's attempt to really globalize the game. Because, again, this is nothing new. Games have taken place, exhibition games as well as regular season games have taken place in other parts of the world by the NFL in their attempt to broaden the horizons of where this game could be. But ideally, I mean, they haven't had much success globalizing the brand. Now, if you look at other sports, in contrast, one really stands out to me. And, near the end of his career, I started to really kind of have a different viewpoint on him, and that being David Stern, the former commissioner of the NBA. But it's one thing you can say. David Stern was a very smart businessman in how he marketed it, the brand of the NBA, and making it a global game. Now, there are many factors that aided in that transition as well. But looking at the NFL, a sport that really hasn't globalized successfully, I mean, I really just don't think that they will ever be able to globalize, at least recently. I don't think this is happening anytime soon. What are you guys' thoughts at this attempt, Jack?
I actually, you know, just the idea of it is cool because you mentioned it's kind of like a marketing tool, you know, help bring revenue in. But it's cool because, you know, you get to play a neutral site game and it's in a different, you know, a different place, Wembley Stadium. So how cool is it for people, you know, over there in Europe, they can come to a national football game and, get to see, they might get to see Kelvin Johnson play, but they can at least maybe get a chance to get an autograph from him or something like that. I think that's just pretty cool.
It is. Don't get me wrong. It is a very, very cool thing. Anytime you have an American sport going and taking its brand internationally and just kind of exposing it, if you will. But the thing is about the NFL is the question has to be begged as to why is the NFL not becoming global? Why isn't this endeavor successful, Tyler?
Well, I mean, when the whole London games were announced, I think it was either this summer or the year before, because they've been doing this for a while, there was some discussion that Roger Goodell wants to put a franchise in London. And I think it's cool to have games there every once in a while, but if you listen to like some of the players talk, they were very against having a franchise in London because it is a primarily American sport. We invented it. But, you know, you got to compete against traditional football, soccer, which is huge in Europe.
Yeah, that was one of my points, right? Yeah.
And it's got to compete against, you know, like cricket. It's got to compete against basketball now, which has become bigger in Europe. It's, you know, the market is getting saturated with other sports, and it's hard for the NFL, as popular as it is here, to break into that one.
Yeah, definitely, and I totally agree. And that's one of the points I want to bring up is that when you talk about, you know, globalizing, soccer is so big internationally. I mean, it may not be that big here in America. I think it's making strides considering what took place this past summer with the World Cup. But I mean, it's still got a long way to go to becoming a mainstream sport here in America. Internationally, I mean, soccer is so big, huge. And you know what? I was talking to one of my friends who did a study abroad this past summer. And if you bring up, if you call American football internationally, I mean, they take offense to that. They say, yo, soccer is football to them. That's the genuine game of football. And when looking at it, you know, it's like, how can the NFL compete with a sport that is the most popular sport in the world? They got a long way to go. It's not going to happen recently. I say give it maybe 10 to 20 years before the NFL can legitimately be called a globalized phenomenon. Tyler?
Yeah, I think that they're going about it the right way by starting in London, and I think eventually they will get a franchise in London, and it's been popular there, so it might be successful. But one major advantage that soccer has over football is that the only thing you need to play soccer is a ball. In football, I mean, you don't necessarily need pads, but if you're going to play competitively, I mean, it's highly encouraged because when when it's in a contact sport, you need that protection. So,
especially with the concussion discussion that's becoming so big each and every year. Yeah,
so
definitely.
That's why soccer appeals to a lot more people, I think, because you just need a ball and you go.
Yeah, it's real. It's cheap. It's cheap to play. It doesn't take a lot. Alex, what's your thoughts on this, man?
Yeah, all great points so far. The one thing I have to add is that my thoughts on why football's had such a hard time are the concussions. You look at basketball, soccer, sure, soccer, you're going out for headers, and that happens. But with all the research and the new technology that's coming out with football, other sports really don't have to worry about that as much, and they don't have to take a lot of the claim with all these $80, $100 million lawsuits that are coming with the NFL today. And for me, I think that's really hurting the NFL's expansion capabilities because of all the research that's done, and you're having all these documentaries done through ESPN and Fox about former players and brain damage. It's just so much. So at the end of the day, Al, I think it would be a very hard gate to jump over for football moving forward.
No, I agree, and that's something I also want to bring up. I mean, with the concussion ordeal that's taking place in the league right now, and, you know, the League of Denial documentaries, I watched last night on Real Sports that they had an in-depth report on CTE relating to domestic violence cases. Right now, the NFL doesn't look good, and there's an old saying, take care of home first. They got a lot of home problems here in America they need to take care of first before they start looking at the global brand. So, I think there's a lot of cleanup duties to be done first. But it is a good move just to expose it, even just a little bit, you know, going internationally, going to London. And I'm interested to see how the attendance is for that game on Sunday morning at, I believe, was it 8:30? I got to get up early. Is it 8:30? Is it 9:30? Jack is saying 9. Still, that is so early. I mean, I'm not up that time at Sunday. I'm going to have to set my alarm very early for that game. And another thing, though, is the marketing of the NFL internationally. You know, comparing it, you know, going back to the NBA, which is done, you know, arguably the best when it comes to globalization of their brand in American sports in that conversation. You know, the way the NBA became such a global phenomenon is that I just feel as though the NBA knew how to market their superstars better, if you will. When you got a guy like Michael Jordan, if you remember when Michael Jordan was in his heyday, in his prime in the 90s, I mean, I never forget the Barcelona games. I remember Michael Jordan. There was a shot of Michael Jordan walking around in Spain, and he looks up, and there's this huge poster of him, you know, at the dunk contest back in the 80s. I mean, in the Dream Team, I mean, teams like that are epic, and it really put the game of basketball on the map and said, okay, who are these guys? The way David Stern was able to market those superstars on the international level was supreme. And I don't know if the NFL is doing that at all, to be honest with you. I mean, I'll be hard-pressed to argue that Peyton Manning is on some posters or some billboards around in London or China right now. I have no idea. But I just think the superstars and the way they're marketed also is a big component to this conversation. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. The NFL is certainly making strides here. I want to get your thoughts on it, folks. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's talk a little World Series here. Really, really shocking news, as Tyler talked about in our quick hit headliners. The San Francisco Giants captured game one out in Kansas City, defeating the Royals 7-1. Goodness. They ended the heralded streak. I believe it was something like 11 in a row. The Royals hadn't lost all postseason up until last night. And it was just really surprising, seeing as though ideally, the Giants completely dominated most of this game. Now, and you know, it's something I brought up, Alex, did in our conversation right on the brink of this series, right after the Royals had closed out things and they were in the World Series, you know, the first time and Lord knows when. And I brought up how when you're hot like the Royals are, you want to keep that momentum flowing. Having a 5-day layoff might have hurt this team. When you're hot, you want to keep playing. You're like, you don't want to take any days off. You want to keep that momentum flowing. And I just think having that layoff for the Royals may have hurt them in many regards. And the way that game started just seemed to set the tone for the rest of that game. With Hunter Pence's home run in the first inning, I mean, my goodness. And things just continue to go south in that game.
The only thing I could say with the Royals, it kind of reminds me of how bad AL teams do in the World Series over the last 5 years. If you remember when the Tigers got there, they got flustered too. It seems that there's consistent curse of AL Central specific teams, granted AL, that when they get to the series, the pressure just gets to them. They just crack. And it's just too bad because even though they're playing so bad so far through the first game, it's funny because I don't know if you're on Snapchat and listeners, Snapchat is really blown up because there's a whole Snapchat story
on the
just
Royals
for the World Series game.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And they
right.
show clips from different fans. They rip different kinds of footage and Snapchat videos and combine it onto like a montage. And all of the videos at the end of the game, no matter what the performance was of the AL Central or the Royals, they're just happy to be there. I feel that there's a sense of complacency with Royals fans. They didn't even care if they lost. There were snaps all the time about win or lose, we're still having fun.
And that's the thing. Complacency is another argument we had before this series started, is that, you know, the Royals, I mean, they haven't been here in a long, long time, folks. A long, long time. So is just getting there enough? Has complacency set in for this team? That's certainly a legit argument. And in many ways, maybe it's, you know, the argument can also be made if you know, they were shell-shocked. You know, being in a World Series, being on the primetime stage, I mean, the two best teams in baseball. The Royals haven't been here in quite some time, folks. Are they just comfortable with just getting there? Who knows? But again, Hunter Pence, that first inning homer was huge to me. It set the tone for the rest of the game. That moment was highlighted, a 3-run burst against James Shields. He didn't have a great game in that one. And you know what? An alarming statistic for those who are superstitious out there at all. You know, the game one winner in the World Series has gone on to win the World Series, the whole enchilada, 15 of the last 17 times. 15 of the last 17, folks. So I don't know if you're superstitious and, you know, kumbaya, who knows. But, hey, with that being said, I mean, hey, history may be rewriting itself. Who knows? But, again, I want to get your thoughts. Do you think the Royals are done? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Michigan State and Michigan rivalry by talking about a player who will be on the field on Saturday. That's right, redshirt wide receiver Andre Sims joins me here in the studio. You don't want to miss that. Don't touch that dial. Current Sports returns in the blink of an eye. All right, welcome back to Current Sports, ladies and gents. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. And in light of rivalry week, yes, Michigan State and Michigan will be playing 3:30 p.m. at Spartan Stadium this Saturday. It's a big game. It seems as though that's what everybody has been talking about all week. And in light of that, we have a player for the Michigan State football team. He's also an outstanding intern for us here at Current Sports. Andre Sims, MSU junior wide receiver. Andre, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing real good. How you doing?
Hey, thanks a lot for joining me in the studio today. Now, let's just dive right into it. I mean, again, this is rivalry week. This is what fans, this is what, you know, people in this area, people out in Ann Arbor, I mean, a lot of people in this state, this is what they've been waiting on for quite some time. With this rivalry being so big, I mean, what makes it for you as a player so intense, Andre?
I don't know, just when I came up here, well, I'm from Georgia, so I really don't understand. I understand now, but yeah. I really don't know how, you know, the Michigan fans and the Michigan players feel about this game. I've been on the field and I played against them, and it's a different feeling, like when you're going up against them and the hype that the coaches put on us when we play them, it's a lot different. And the adrenaline when we're playing, we're going a lot faster. It don't matter what the records are. It don't matter how we're ranked or how they're ranked. It's a battle. It's like a bloodbath, like coach coach would say. And I don't know. It's something about it. I can't put words to it. It's just it's the action.
Just that aura of Michigan and Michigan State. I mean, it has such a storied history. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Tywan Jones yesterday in the presser, he talked about how, you know, really this is a battle for the respect in Michigan, in the state of Michigan, to see who top dog is.
Exactly.
And you know, it's an interesting perspective because for you just talked about how you being from Georgia, how, you know, you really, you know, didn't understand what the rivalry was all about because you're not from Michigan. Connor Cook also talked about that as well, him not being from the state of Michigan. He sort of had to learn how to dislike Michigan. Is that accurate to say with you, Andre?
That's exactly what it is. And when you get here, that's the first thing we talk about as a freshman. It's like, oh, them dudes down the road, you know, you gonna learn. That's what they say. You're going to learn about them.
Right.
And you know, when we play them, that's exactly what it was. And when they stepped on the field, it was kind of like, man, I don't like how they walking on the field right now. It's just that that arrogance they got and just all this other stuff. I ain't going to get too in-depth with it on the radio, but it's just how, you know, we both standing from on one side of the sideline to the other looking at them, and they looking at us, and they like, you know, y'all about to get beat down. Y'all ain't Michigan. And we like, well, you know what, bring it on. It's just that hype. It's just like a rivalry. Like, it's just like that person you don't like in high school, you walking past them in the hallway, and it's just like, you know what, I don't like you, they don't like you. And
right.
And it's just, that's how it is. It's just the hate. And, you know, through the years I've been here, it elevated each and every year. And it's just like, I might not be from here, but I know, I mean, I kind of get a gist of what it's like.
Yeah, certainly in your blood now. Right. And now looking at this whole thing, and you talk about since you've been here, now you being a redshirt junior wide receiver for this team, I mean, you know, playing Michigan all the years you've been here so far, do you have a favorite U of M Michigan State playing story?
I feel like all the games we done played, it was a story behind all of them. But I feel like last year we set the tone. I mean, last year was a Rose Bowl year, and for the defense to do what they did last year against them, I don't know if you've seen this, but the statistics from 5 years – mm-hmm. 5 years ago and now, and the scoring for Michigan has, like, decreased each
every
year.
Every single year. Yeah, yeah, exactly. What are you going to score, 3 points this year? I don't know.
Yeah, I can't even tell you. But I'd probably say last year just because of how we ended the season and how that game is emphasized every single year. Mm-hmm. I feel like last year was a good year.
Wait, and I'm assuming, Andre, you were here in 2012, right? Mm-hmm. I remember I was a rookie sports reporter. I shared this story on yesterday's show. I was a rookie sports reporter for Channel 6 News. I was out there covering that 2012 game. Of course, the game-winning field goal, mm-hmm. Michigan wins, is at the Big House. And I remember telling Alex, like, it was so chaotic because fans actually came out of the stands at the Big House onto the field. It was total chaos. And even some of the Michigan players approached your guys' sidelines and were barking a little bit. I mean, from that moment on, even though D'Antonio has won 5 of the 6 past years now, I mean, it's got to sting when you do lose to them.
Right.
How did that moment feel in 2012?
I didn't want that to be the moment. Then when you asked me what was my favorite moment, but
right.
It kind of like, that's what really set it off right there. For me, personally, it was just like, I don't want to say they didn't deserve the win. They got the win. It doesn't matter how you win, they got it. But I just feel like that we let them off the hook a little bit. You know, it was just like, oh, man, you know, we could have did a lot more to get that W, you know.
Right.
And it
right.
hurt, and it hurt. But it was a good hurt because the next year we put it on them. And we feel like that's how it's going to be from now on.
Yeah, so, motivated you guys yeah. to a degree.
Yeah.
Without
yeah.
a doubt.
It had a chip on our shoulder for after that game. So I feel like that game was kind of like a stamp on the hate for me, because knowing that we didn't go out there and we didn't, you know, capitalize on some of the things we could have, mm-hmm. kind of they took the game away. So
definitely. Ladies and gents, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with Andre Sims, MSU redshirt junior wide receiver for the Michigan State football team. Now, Andre, you know, when looking at the preparation that goes into Michigan week for you all, I mean, it's so intense because usually every Tuesday, Mark D'Antonio holds his morning presser at 11:30. Later on, I'll probably, you know, trickle down to, down to practice and film a little bit for the TV show, film a little bit, get some shots left and right for the TV show. But, you know, it's so intense because in Michigan week, you can even sense a change in how you guys do things. I mean, no distractions at all. Practice was completely closed yesterday. I mean, what has practice been like? Have you sensed in the locker room and going through drills with the coaching personnel with you guys that it's kind of ramped up a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Like, when they pull the trophy out, when they pull Paul out and put him in the middle of the locker room.
That's what they do. They've been doing that all week so far?
Yeah. So Paul is in the locker room right now just chilling in. And the emphasis this week is keeping Paul home. So, you know, that's where he needs to be, in the middle of our locker room, just chilling.
And he's there right now as we speak. Paul Bunyan right is there right now.
Right now. And everybody be Snapchatting, taking pictures of him and, you know, saying, yeah, he here to stay and stuff like that. It's all fine and good. But the coaches emphasize to us that this week is different from any other week. Of course, it's a game that we need to win, just like the rest of the games from now on mm-hmm. up until the Big Ten Championship. But this game is a statement game. It's more so a game to Coach D kind of describes it as who will walk the streets of Michigan, you know, instead of the alleys, who's the top dog in the state. And that's the kind of game it is. Who's going to be the number one, you know, who's the better team and, you know, all that stuff. So Coach D is like, he emphasizes this week to be a focus week, preparation, enthusiasm. And like you said, amped up. We amp up practice, music's louder. Coaches yelling harder, mm-hmm. Just a lot more going on this week than any other week. Mm-hmm. I know it might sound kind of contradicting because each week should be like that. But this weekend, like,
it's a big rivalry.
Yeah, it's Michigan. So, I mean, everything has to be amped up times 10, times 1,000. And that's how we go about practice this whole week, you know, so.
Now, Dre, I asked Coach D this question yesterday at the press conference. And, you know, looking at the contrast between the Michigan State football program compared to U of M. I mean, U of M, of course, I mean, just calling it like it is. I mean, this football team has been going through a lot. From the Shane Moore story to the protest on campus calling for Dave Brandon and Brady Hoke's jobs to just, you know, the losses, you know, the countless losing that really has not been an experience that is common in Ann Arbor. Looking at this team, I mean, does this game lack any luster at all, looking at the records that both of these teams are approaching this game with? Or does that, like you said, do records not even matter in this game?
Yeah, I feel like the records don't even matter. We put all that to the side when we play Michigan. It's just like the rivalry is, you know, more than just the records and what they got going on. It doesn't even matter how they're, you know, going about things, like their season so far. It doesn't matter. They can be number one or the last team in the nation. It doesn't matter. We could be number one or the last team in the nation. They're going to bring everything they got, and we're going to bring everything we got. So
right.
I feel like we don't pay attention to, you know, what they got going on, regardless of whatever it is, you know, whatever the record is. We don't really pay attention to them until the week comes, and then our focus is solely on them. But as far as, like, everything they got going on, we don't pay attention to that. I feel like this rivalry is more based on toughness and who's going to get the job done and who's going to come out number one in the state. So,
right.
You know, anything they got going on with the coaches and the players, rise on camp, we don't really care about all that.
You just care about winning.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with them. When they come over here, it's just like they want to beat us in our house, just like we want to beat them in their houses. They don't care if we're number four or number one. It doesn't matter. It's just the fact that two teams in the state of Michigan, two good teams in the state of Michigan, prestige teams in the state of Michigan are going head-to-head for Paul. And, you know, like I said, Paul is in our locker room, and we feel as though he should stay there for a long time. So,
right.
Yeah, like I said, it's just we don't worry about nothing they got going on over there. As far as, like, off the field issues or whatever, we just more so ready to compete on Saturday.
Definitely. And you know what? Looking at the Paul Bunyan Trophy, I got to be honest with you, Andre. I mean, it's not the most attractive trophy. I mean, I think it's one of the more ugly trophies I've ever seen in my life. But, I mean, you guys don't care about that, huh? I mean, just having them in there, what it symbolizes means so much more, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I came up here, I didn't know nothing about no Paul Bunyan Trophy.
What did you think when you first saw that trophy? Be honest with me, Andre. Like, what in the world is that?
Yeah.
You probably had to Google who Paul Bunyan was, probably.
No, I didn't really. I didn't know nothing about the Paul Bunyan Trophy, the rivalry. I didn't know nothing. Until, you know, when you get in here, they just bathe you in the hate of Michigan and Paul, you know, staying here. And it's just, that's just how it is. And I feel like, you know, the freshmen who haven't been a part of this will soon learn. They've been learning all week, and people have been, you know, getting in their ear about how much hate we have for them. And come game time, they'll see some of the freshmen playing this year. We'll see. And, you know, it's a good experience for them.
Definitely. So. Without a doubt. Now, you know, looking at now, thinking about your guys' season up to this point right now, of course, you guys are coming off a big win on the road against Indiana, a game which really you guys, after that second quarter, I mean, just asserted dominance in that second half, a complete, you know, half shutout in that second half. You know, looking at this team right now, looking at the personnel, the way the offense is clicking right now, and looking at the defense, you know, and how they are coming together, at least in that second half in that Indiana game, is it safe to say that this is the best you guys have been all year?
Yeah, I think this is one of the better games we played all year, yeah. Our focus last week was finishing the whole game, you know, finishing up until the fourth quarter. People talked about us not being a team that played all four quarters.
Did you guys take that personal hearing that criticism?
Yeah, we don't really want to pay attention to what the people say outside of the football room, but at the same time, we know that, you know, the stats don't lie, and the fourth quarter wasn't our quarter for the past couple of games. So that's a big emphasis we had last week going into the game. And we kind of started off slow. We got the ball rolling towards the second quarter and for the rest of the game. But our focus was finishing, and I feel like if we all come together and complete a whole game where from the first quarter to the fourth quarter, then, you know, we'll stand out a little bit more. But we took a step in the right direction last week finishing the game, and the defense did a good job. The offense was clicking. Special teams did a lot better than we did the first couple weeks of the season, and we can only go up. You know, that's how I feel about it.
Certainly. And, you know, Andre, before I get you out of here, I want to talk about the national perception of this MSU football team so far. It's unlike anything I've seen since being a student at Michigan State, even now, you know, having, what, two almost 3 years in the game, being a sports reporter here in the area. I've never seen a national perception of the MSU football team be one that is now in national title talks. I mean, looking at Vegas right now, they have you guys possibly, you know, with the best odds to win the national championship. Do you guys pay attention to that at all?
We try not to, because a lot of that stuff is, you know, out of our control, really. What we can control is what's ahead of us right now. And the first thing we have to really be focused on is winning every single game every week to get to the Big Ten Championship. That's the number one goal right now.
Right.
And if we start looking ahead, then, you know, things will start, you know, going south. And we don't need that. So, yeah, that's all fine and good that we're in the talk for the national championship. But right now we want to go 1-0 each and every week. So the game that week is the most important game, and we feel like if we go into the game feeling like this is our last game of the season and we give it all we got, then we'll come out with a W and then take the same mentality and go on to the next week and do it just the same way. So right now we're just trying to get to the Big Ten Championship and do everything we can to get there. And then everything else will take care of itself. If you look at the top 10 or the top 5, whatever, most of the teams have to play each other. So if we do what we got to do up here, everything will take care of itself, and we'll, you know, end up having a chance to go to the first playoff. And that would be cool. But the hype around Michigan State around the nation is all fine and good. But, you know, we as Michigan State Spartans thrive on being the underdogs, and we, you know, kind of take pride in that. So we don't really worry about what's going on out there and
right
and all that. So
totally hear you.
Yeah, we're just home right now. We just stay right here in our little cylinder, and you know. We'll work around that when it get time to it.
Well, there you go. Well, we'll see if Paul Bunyan can rest easy this weekend and stay in East Lansing. Hey, Andre, wish you guys luck, and really appreciate the time. Appreciate it, brother.
No problem. Appreciate you having me on.
There you go. Andre Sims, MSU redshirt, junior, wide receiver again, Michigan State and Michigan this weekend. It's rivalry week, folks. Let's hit our second break. Still more to come, folks. We'll dive into Barbershop Wednesday, talk a little Red Wings, and Kobe Bryant. Is he a top 40 player? Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Wednesday, October 22nd. Alex, you like to call it World Wednesday. I don't know what. Who is this? Who is this singing?
It's some Japanese music. This is Bubble Pop right here.
Bubble Pop?
That's what it's called.
Bubble Pop. Nice.
It's hit music right now. It's off the charts.
Is it? Wow. Bubble Pop.
Only on Current Sports.
Only. You can't get this on any other sports show in the world. I guarantee it, folks. Welcome back to the show. We have a great one to wrap up. We only have about 20 minutes left here on the show. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything we talk about, 517-355-9527. I have to remind you all that Current Sports TV, like each and every Wednesday, tapes tonight at 6 p.m. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by going to WKAR.org and signing up online for free. I'll be sitting down with one of the most inspirational dudes that I've come across since becoming a sports reporter in this area. His name is Ronald Mann, and he is a mixed martial artist, and not just any ordinary mixed martial artist. Ronald is actually an amputee MMA fighter. That's right. He lost his right leg due to a motorcycle accident. And I tell you what, folks, he is really just tearing it up in the octagon. Has one remarkable record, and it's not like he goes in there and fights against other amputee fighters. No, he fights against able-bodied opponents, folks. It's unbelievable. He has quite the story. Again, he'll be sitting down with me tonight, 6 p.m. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can do so by going to WKAR.org and signing up online for free. Going to be a fantastic episode. And also, on that same token, if you want to watch any episode that we've done in Current Sports TV history, simply go to video.wkr.org and you can watch any episode we've done, folks. It's pretty a pretty amazing website, okay? All right, well, let's dive into Barbershop Wednesday. And today's Barbershop Wednesday focuses on Monet Davis. Yes, if you were tuning into the World Series yesterday, I'm sure many of you came across a pretty cool commercial that featured Monet Davis, the 13-year-old female pitching phenomenon that became so popular during the Little League World Series, the first female pitcher in Little League World Series history to pitch a complete game shutout. Unbelievable stuff. But Monet was featured in a 90-minute commercial spot, which the great Spike Lee directed. How about that? So, you know, we wanted to bring this conversation to the forefront because, you know, it came out that Monet will be receiving, that she can receive, I should say, compensation for doing the commercial. And there was a lot of talk about, oh, my goodness, so, you know, does this go against NCAA, you know, protocol? Can she be doing this and so on and so forth? But, you know, they let it slide. Thank goodness, because if they didn't, I would have had a huge rant at the beginning of this show. OK, folks. But, you know, we want to just talk about the impact that Monet Davis is having on the world of baseball and sports in general and just how big this truly is. Barbershop Wednesday starts now.
Well, I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but a healthy conversation.
Yo, Yes, welcome back to Current Sports, folks. Again, this is Barbershop Wednesday, where we love to debate and discuss a topic that looks outside the box of sports. And, of course, Monet Davis truly epitomizes that very discussion. Now, you know, she appeared in a commercial that aired during Game 1 of the World Series last night. And, you know, it's unbelievable stuff because, you know, Monet Davis, I've never seen a story like this one. You have a female pitcher, she pitched in the Little League World Series, who got all of this press, and press that was certainly deserving because, I mean, man, she really tore it up, folks. The first girl in Little League World Series history to pitch a shutout. She's very talented, very talented. But her, you know, her goal in life isn't to, you know, become a big league pitcher in the MLB. She actually wants to become a point guard for the famed UConn women's basketball team in college, under, of course, the great Gino Auriemma. So there's many out there that look at this story, and it's a feel-good story. You know, she's certainly remarkable. And we want to bring to the forefront for our Barbershop Wednesday today, what exactly does the impact of Monet Davis mean on the game of baseball and on sports in general? Now, to start this discussion, guys, I, of course, welcome Jacques DeWitt and Tyler Beck to join me also on the same token. You know, for me, I really, I don't know what you guys thought about this story, but I really thought it was so cool. Monet Davis, what really impressed me, I mean, she's 13 years old. And, you know, she's on this remarkable stage. All eyes are on her. Actually, you know, when looking at the ratings, this is something that really blew my mind and also can just kind of put some perspective just where baseball is today. This really was a moment with, I believe, I forget what game it was in this whole thing, but one of her games actually had one of the highest ratings that have ever been seen in the world of baseball. Check this out. Her game, one of the games, it doesn't say which game it was specifically, but her game, one of the games against Las Vegas, had a larger viewing audience than every major league telecast on ESPN besides the Home Run Derby in the past 7 years. It was the network's biggest baseball draw since 5.3 million watched the Red Sox and Yankees play in April of 2007. That's putting a lot of things in context right there, folks. And again, she's being a lot of the press for it. Just to play a little snippet from that Spike Lee commercial that aired last night. Here it is.
Dear United States of America, I'm 13 years old. This summer was the best summer of my young life. Out of this whole journey, the best part was having my family behind me, supporting me through everything I did. I have a passion for sports. Every day of the week, I'm playing soccer, basketball, or baseball. I stand for girls who want to play sports with the boys and to be a role model for people, young and old. I throw 70 miles per hour. That's throwing like a girl. Sincerely, your daughter, Monet Davis.
Oh, gotta love that. Gotta love that. I got goosebumps when I saw it the first time, guys. Now, what does this mean now? You know, Monet Davis being this 13-year-old phenomenon, who is not only 13, you know, she transcends in a lot of areas here because, one, she's a girl. Two, she's African-American. What does this mean, and how can this impact sports, and not even just in the baseball room, but just sports in general? What are your thoughts, Tyler?
Well, I think that it's very brave of her to put herself out there as a role model. I mean, that would probably be thrust upon her just because her name is now a household name at the age of 13. Like, that's a lot of pressure. But being a role model for not only, like, girls, but African-Americans too, and African-American girls, like, that's a very small minority, but it's noble, and that's great that she's able to break down those barriers and show, hey, like, I can do this just as good as the boys. Like, it's very inspirational. It's hard to knock her, and she seems to go about it the right way.
That's so true, Jack.
Oh, wow. That's a great commercial, you know, that term, throwing like a girl. Kind of like when, you know, you think about that, you think of a guy throwing soft or not the right way. But, you know, if she's one of the best players playing baseball, even though that's a guy sport, I think that not only should she be able to play, but she might be able to play in the future at a higher level, and that'd be really cool to see, you know. You got Brittany Griner, who Mark Cuban talked about, oh, you know, maybe drafting her, maybe signing her just to see how it would be. But I think it's a really cool concept.
It is, you know, and for me, it kind of, you know, again, you know, with her being African-American, with her being a girl, I mean, she reaches such a broad audience here and hits on a lot of topics. For me, you know, being from Detroit, baseball, frankly, guys, and me being from Detroit, me being African-American, I see baseball dying so often, each and every, especially when I was in high school. I mean, baseball, I would talk to my grandfather and grandmother. I remember having conversations with them, and baseball was like how pickup basketball is right now in today's, for today's youth. You know, back in the day, you know, my grandma would talk about how they would just, you know, the entire neighborhood would come together, her and her friends. They would find an open field and play baseball in the summertime from sunup to sundown. And over time, I mean, you had the baseball greats of the past that really inspired many to try the game, like, you know, the Jackie Robinsons and the Hank Aarons of the game. It's so alarming because those numbers have continually gone down in the African-American community. So for me, it was refreshing, if anything, to see the Jackie Robinson All-Stars, not even just Monet Davis, but to see her entire team really playing baseball and being good at the game. You know, looking at it, in the mid-1970s, folks, 27% of Major League Baseball players were black. By 1995, the number had slipped to just 19%. Opening day rosters this past spring showed just 8.3% of all big leaguers were African American. Now, again, I think it's unfair to put the weight of the world, the weight of the African American community, the weight of, you know, the female baseball community on the shoulders of Monet Davis. But my goodness, this is a story that makes you feel good and encourages you that there is hope out there. Now, there are multiple factors and facets that sort of talk about why African Americans aren't playing the game of baseball. To be honest, I mean, when you got, you know, legends like LeBron James and Kobe Bryant in the game of basketball, and seeing how the game of basketball is so fast-paced, I believe, guys, we live in a society now where we want immediate gratification. In sports, if whatever you play, you want immediate gratification. And basketball and football allows that, at least faster than baseball. There are many complaints that baseball is too slow. You know, that you could go innings. You could go a full game without a score being, you know, on the scoreboard. But, you know, and even looking at the superstars of the game, the African-American superstars, that is, Michael Jordan, LeBron James. I mean, those guys are much larger than, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. or Mike Trout will ever be. You know, and looking at that dynamic, it's so alarming. But I will say, Monet, hats off to her. And again, you know, when you guys just pointed out, I mean, for her to be 13 to be that charismatic and willing to put herself out there, I think it's truly admirable. She's ahead of her years right now.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a lot of names there, like Michael Jordan. I mean, Michael Jordan is just one of the all-time greats in basketball, and he will almost certainly be a role model for the group that you just mentioned. But when you were talking about, like, the decline of African-Americans in baseball, especially in, like, 1990 and, like, to now, I mean, one name kind of jumps out to me as you were saying that. Do you remember Deion Sanders? Yeah. I mean, he's known a little bit more for football, but he was a good baseball player, too, back in the day.
He was. He definitely was. That is very, very true. That's a very good point. I mean, and you need those athletes to just transcend on so many levels. And I always go back to the Tiger Woods example as well. I mean, Tiger Woods opened the door for a lot of minorities to play, to get out and just at least try the game of golf. Because, I mean, I've never seen an African-American out there dominating the game of golf the way Tiger Woods was. I mean, my dad wouldn't have picked up a golf club if it wasn't for Tiger Woods. He probably wouldn't be playing now if it wasn't for Tiger Woods. So, I mean, when you have somebody like this, I mean, I think it's great. And also for women's sports, let's be honest here. Women's sports don't get a lot of attention in the media. I mean, this past season, I didn't even know the WNBA playoffs were on until randomly I turned on SportsCenter and they were showing highlights of it. It's one of those things that is certainly an elephant in the room. I remember seeing a Family Guy spoof on there was one scene on Family Guy where they say, yeah, you know, this is like a WNBA game. And they had like one person in the stands clapping. I'm sitting there like, my goodness, you know, it's just so alarming. And you need certain athletes to sort of carry that torch. As unfair as that may be sometimes in many contexts, those athletes have to transcend on many levels. And it's encouraging to see someone this young do that. I wish you would stick with baseball, to be honest with you, because baseball, looking at those numbers, those ratings, That's scary. Those are scary numbers if you are a baseball fan. Looking at the Little League World Series, one game in the Little League World Series trounced your ratings dating back to 2007. Really? Come on now. That's unbelievable to me, Jack.
Yeah, well, you brought up the point just, you know, that a number of African-Americans in the MLB are dying, and the Tigers had at least two on the opening day roster with Rajay Davis and Austin Jackson. But for me, it just sucks because, you know, I'm white, and I try not to see color. My two favorite baseball players ever are Jock Jones and Dontrell Willis, who are both African-Americans. So, I don't know how to put it, but I wish that there were more in there because I like the way those two in particular play the game. You've got greats like Ernie Banks. You mentioned Hank Aaron, Willie Mays. You know, those guys, they're legends. And Barry Bonds even, you know, 762 career home runs. So
Yeah. That's true. That is very true.
So, you guys, let me ask you this now that we have 3 minutes left.
Oh, wow. That time flies.
You mentioned that we live in a society of instant gratification. But we are polarized and we love to see these athletes excel at what they do. Now, talent comes into play for sure, but undoubtedly these people spend hours honing their craft. Mm-hmm. But because our society is instant gratification, are we seeing a decline of these superstars because people don't want to spend hours honing their craft?
As far as from the athlete perspective or from the fan's perspective?
Both.
Boy, that's a loaded question right there. I would say for me, looking at how, you know, again, going back to the comment of instant gratification, I mean, it's easy to find, you know, to turn on a basketball game and to see points being scored galore. But the game of baseball, and it's the reason why, you know, there are talks about speeding up the game. You know, it seems as though every year in the offseason when it comes to the MLB, you know, the council was sitting down talking about how can we make the game more appealing? How can we make it faster? How can we not have so much dead time? And it's the reason why they're having these discussions because they're seeing, you know, basketball and football put up these insurmountable amounts of points, and it's eye candy. Sports, those two sports are eye candy. For me, I'm gonna be honest with you guys. It's hard for me to sit down unless the Tigers are playing, and to sit down and watch a baseball game in its entirety. Did you guys watch the World Series inning by inning last night? This is the World Series we're talking about. No. You probably might have brought. I was actually flipping between that and five other channels. So for me, I think it's got a long way to go. But we do need to have examples in so many other areas if baseball is going to survive in that regard. So what do you think about it, folks? Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I'll read it on tomorrow's show. You can even tweet me at AlMartinWKR or go and tweet at our official Current Sports Facebook page, Twitter page, excuse me, at WKR_sports. We'll be back at it tomorrow. I want to extend a heartfelt thank you to all of you for tuning in to today's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic hump day, and be easy, people.